Throughout every day of creation, Hashem brought forth different aspects, different features. And after each creation, the expression is used, Vayar Elokim Ki Tov, Hashem saw that it was good. The only exception is on the sixth day, when Hashem created Adam. Then instead of saying Vayar Elokim Ki Tov, the expression is Vayar Elokim Ki Tov Ma'od, Hashem saw that it was very good. All of creation was good, everything was good except Adam. When Hashem created man, then Hashem used the expression Ki Tov Ma'od, it was very good. And the Medrash Rabba says that what this refers to actually is Misa, death. When Hashem created man, Hashem also created a feature called death. And when Hashem created death, Hashem said, Ki Tov Ma'od, it's very good. Why? Because thereby man will have an opportunity to work, have a chance to grow, be put in this world to accomplish, to change, and he will reach a time, his body will be put in the ground, and he will separate. And then for eternity, he'll be able to enjoy that which he accomplished. There'll be schar, there'll be reward. Tov ma'od, because there's this world, there's a world to come, and that's very good. And that's the Medrash. The only problem with that Medrash is if you study the way Chazal depict Adam Rishon, and if you study the way our Chachamim described to us how man was supposed to be. The Derech Hashem is very clear that Hashem put Adam into Gan Eden in a position where he was to reach perfection. You see, Hashem put man into Gan Eden and allowed him to perfect himself, to reach tremendous heights, to become an unbelievably great human being, and to remain in that state forever. Adam sinned. When he ate from the Eitz Hadas, when he ate from the tree of knowledge, what he did was he destroyed the Bria. He destroyed creation. And because of that, the Derech Hashem explains, Hashem had to introduce death. Not death as a punishment, but death because man had ruined the world. Hashem put him in a place, gave him all of the tools, all the capacity to change himself, to mold himself into that great human being that he would be for eternity. But by sinning, what he did was he ruined the world, and now death had to be introduced because the original plan no longer would work. He messed up the whole situation. Now there has to be a death, olam haneshamos, a time of spending time away from the body, then tchias ha-meisim, a rejoining in a sort of body like this where man will enjoy forever what he accomplished. But the point is that death isn't good. Death is bad, very bad. And if you'd like an illustration of this concept, I've mentioned this before, but I think it bears repeating, go to a shiva house. Go to a shiva house of a young woman who lost her husband, and look at that situation. Six orphans, little people, left alone and bereft. And say to yourself, this was not supposed to be. Death was not part of the original plan. Work, as we do now, 9 to 5, with tremendous pressures and anxieties, was not part of the plan. When Hashem created man, Hashem put man into Gan Eden, and all of his needs were met. Food fully prepared, ripe fruit off the trees, Malachim to serve his every need. Man was not supposed to labor. Suffering, pain, torture was not part of the plan. Man was put into Gan Eden, put into that state, and he was supposed to grow and accomplish. He was supposed to reach tremendous heights, and he ruined it. The Medrash tells us that before that act, Hashem took Adam and showed him the Ilani Gan Eden. He showed him the beauty, the trees of Gan Eden, and said, Tein daitcha shelo hachriv olamim, Adam, pay attention. This is your world. I created it for you. Everything in it depends on you. If you use this world appropriately, if you grow, if you accomplish, the world itself has kiyuma, is elevated, and is sustained. And if you turn to the wrong way, then everything here will be destroyed. The keys of creation were given to man. And when man messed up, he ruined the world. And what that means in plain, simple language is that 5 2,000 plus years of suffering, all of history, wars, torture, bloodshed, everything that mankind has experienced wasn't supposed to be. So how could the Medrash tell us Tov Ma'od, Hashem created death and that was very good, death is bad, and death is a plan B, a b'di'evet, a horrible situation that Nebuch, after Adam ruined it, have to sustain something? How could the Medrash tell us that Tov Ma'od, it was very good? And I believe the answer to this question requires some real stepping back and understanding things from a very different perspective. And to do that, I'd like to introduce a question which some people are bothered by. It's a famous philosophical question. It goes something like this. If Hashem knows what I'm going to do, then I don't have a choice. Because Hashem knows it, so obviously I don't have a choice. See, if I do have a choice to do something, then it's not possible for Hashem to know that I'm going to do it. And if Hashem doesn't know, then I could have a choice. But it can't be that Hashem knows what I'm going to do, and I also have free choice to do it. Either Hashem knows what I'm going to do, and then obviously I'm going to do it, I have to do it, I don't have free choice. Or Hashem doesn't know what I'm going to do, and then I do have free choice. But Hashem knowing what I'm going to do, am I having free choice to do that, sounds inconsistent. Now, to be honest with you, if you never ask this question, if you spend your life and never ask this question and never discover an answer for it, you'll do very well. You can find the first row in Gan Eden as your place for eternity. You can grow, you can accomplish. However, some people are bothered by the question, and it is worthwhile for us to deal with it, to try to think about it a little bit and try to see if we can understand how it's possible that we could have free will and yet Hashem knows what it is that we're going to do. So I'd like to share with you that there are two answers to this question. Two answers to this question. Both of these answers are true, but only one is the correct answer. The first answer is something that I call Jimmy the Greek. Jimmy the Greek, as you know, was a bookmaker. He used to place the odds on the bets. He would tell you the odds are such and such as to who will win which football game, which president will be elected. Famous bookmaker Jimmy the Greek. What that means is as follows. Imagine the following. Imagine you have a young child, and in front of this young child, you put the most delicious treat that you know she loves. It's a lollipop that's colorful, and it's something that she craves. You put that in front of her, and then next to it, you put a dull piece of wood. Which do you think she's going to reach out to? It's a no-brainer. Obviously, you know the child. You know what she desires. You know what she likes. She's going to reach for the lollipop. She's going to do it. You know the odds are very great. In fact, almost definite that she is going to reach out for the lollipop. And that's certain knowledge that you have of what's going to be. Some people answer this question by saying, obviously, Hashem is much, much smarter than we are. Hashem is so much smarter than we are that Hashem looks up from Shemayim and knows what we're going to do. Much like Jimmy the Greek lays odds and says the odds are 50-1 that this horse is going to win or this football team will lose. Hashem knows our nature. Hashem knows. And just like a parent could look at a child and tell you what most likely the child will do, Hashem can create man, know his nature, and say most likely this is what he's going to do. Now that is 100% true. 100% true, but it's not the correct answer to the question. Because Hashem's yediyah, Hashem's knowledge is complete and total. That answer is most likely, you know, probably, maybe even 99.9%. After all, Hashem is very, 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 very smart. So it's most likely very, very good that he knows what's going to be. But that's not yediyah. That's not complete knowledge. That's not Hashem's knowledge of the future. That's a very, very good guess, but it's not yediyah, and it's not the correct answer. To understand the correct answer to this question, and we've discussed it in a previous shmooze, but it very much bears repeating, you have to understand Hashem's relationship to this world, to man, and more than anything, to time. And to explain what I mean, let me give you a mushel. Imagine that before Ma'aseh Bereishis, before Hashem created this physical world, imagine that there are two malachim, two angels, and they're having a conversation. And one says to the other, you know, I heard that Hashem is going to create a physical world. One malach says to his friend. So his friend says, really, what's a physical world? A physical world, well, physical world is a place where there are trees and flowers and oceans and even animals. And I heard there are going to be some large animals and some small. There'll even be an animal so big he's called an elephant. The other malach says, an elephant? What is this thing called you call an elephant? So the first malach said, well, an elephant, it's huge. It weighs thousands and thousands of pounds. It's a behemoth. That conversation never happened. Why? Because before Hashem created physicality, there were no measurements that existed. You see, before Hashem made a physical world, there was no length, no height, no distance, because length is a measure of physical property. Height is a measure of physical property. Before there were elephants, there was no heavy elephants because weight didn't exist. Weight is a measure of physical properties. If you have a physical property, you could tell me how long, how short, how tall, how fat, how heavy. But all of those are measurements that only exist to measure physicality. Before there was physicality, there was no system of measurement because it wasn't relevant. And therefore, Malachim did not discuss whether the giraffes were going to be tall, the elephants were going to be heavy, whether light was going to be bright or not, because there was no system of measurement to measure that. And the reason why I use this mashal is because not only didn't physical dimensions, length, height, weight, exist before Ma'aseh Bereishis, before Hashem created the world, time did not exist either. You see, time is a system of measurement relevant to a physical world. How old, how young, how long was it created for? What's its half-life? When you have a physical creation, you can measure its length and its height, and you can measure how long it's been here. But before Hashem created the physical world, there was no time, because time is only relevant in a physical world. Time is a system of measuring physicality. And before Hashem created the physical world, there was no time. Time is a limit. Time is a definition. Time is a system of measuring physicality. And with that introduction, let me share with you a mashal. Imagine that I have a time machine. You and I can get into this machine and we can go forward in time, backwards in time. We can visit different eras. And I say to you, come on, let's go for a trip. So we get into the time machine and we go 5 years into the future. And we get out, and lo and behold, what do we see? Reuven. Reuven standing there with a gun in his hand, and Shimon trembling, no, don't. And we see Reuven pull the trigger. Bang, 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 and Shimon falls dead on the floor, puddle of blood. Oh my goodness, quick, let's get back in the time machine. We get back in the time machine, and we go back in time. We then walk back to Reuven, 5 years now before what we saw, and said to him, Reuven, you're a murderer. A murderer? What do you mean for me? You murdered Shimon. I didn't murder him. I don't even know him. Here's the question. Do we know that Reuven murdered Shimon? We sure do. We saw it. I saw the trigger, and I saw him pull it. I know for a fact he did it. There's no question in my mind. But here's the next question. When Reuven was on that scene over there, did he have free will? Absolutely. So now when we come back, I know that he was there, he had free will, he pulled the trigger, shot Shimon dead, but now when I come back here, I know what's going to happen in the future, and yet he has free will. But here's the point. I don't know what's going to happen. You can't know what's going to happen. I know what happened before it happened, because I'm not limited by time, because I have my time machine. Because I can go forward and I can go back, I can tell Reuven what it is that he did before he did it, because I'm now back in time beforehand. Now, whether you hear this 100% or not, here's the punchline. Hashem is not physical. Hashem is beyond all limitations. Hashem sits way, way, way above planet Earth and has no limits whatsoever. Hashem existed before time, Hashem will exist after time, and Hashem isn't limited by time. So Hashem can see deep, deep into the future and deep, deep into the past and the very same look, because Hashem is not limited by time. And the reality is that Hashem cannot know what you're going to do, but Hashem knows what you did before you did it. Because Hashem isn't limited by time, He's in the future when you made that decision, and He can tell you now what it is that you did. Not what you're going to do, not what He thinks you're going to do, absolutely, positively what you did, but now back in time before you did it. And this is the correct answer to the question. If you'd like to know how it is that Hashem can know what we're going to do before we did it, the answer is Hashem cannot know. The philosophical question is correct. If Hashem knew what I was going to do, I wouldn't have free will. Hashem doesn't know what I'm going to do. Hashem knows what I did before I did it, because Hashem is there in the future and now back in the past at the same time. So Hashem can tell me now, the moment that He created me, what it is that I did before I did it, because again, He's there in the future and sees it. And I believe that is the answer to understanding this Medrash. You see, when Hashem created Adam HaRishon, Hashem knew what was going to happen. But not through System 2, not with Yediyah or Brura, because you have to give man free will, you have to create him, and you have to let him go through the steps. But before Hashem created Adam, Hashem knew man's nature. And Hashem knew that the odds are very, very good as to what he's going to become. 99.9%, like Jimmy the Greek, but way, way more accurate. Hashem could say, if I am to create a man and give him free will and put him to Gan Eden, what are the odds that he's going to sin? I know it's going to happen. Not with absolute yediyah, not with the kind of knowledge that Hashem has once he created Adam. You see, once Hashem made Adam, all of the future Hashem sees as if it's the past, and Hashem isn't subject to time, and therefore Hashem knows what it is that man did before he did. But before Hashem created man, Hashem can't have that yediyah because there is no man. But Hashem still has the other system. Hashem is very, very wise, very, very understanding. Hashem is the creator of man and knows what it is that most likely 99.99% is going to happen. And when Hashem created man, Hashem knew that man is going to sin and death is going to have to be brought into the world. So the question is, why do it? If you don't want death, and really you want man to stay in Gan Eden and remain forever, why do it when you know it's going to mess up? And that ultimately is the answer to this question. The world that we currently occupy, the world that we live in, is the world that Hashem wanted. Hashem wanted man to sin. Hashem wanted to introduce death. Hashem wanted the world to be exactly as it is now. Why did Hashem want Adam to sin and then, like a act two, have to introduce death and go through all of these steps? I have a theory. I believe the reason is because Hashem is the mativ. Hashem is a giver. Hashem is so good and so kind. Hashem created this world for us to grow, to accomplish. This is the gym. And the ultimate benefit to man is Gan Eden, the world to come. And it's best for man, for mankind as an entirety, it's best for man to be in a world where it's difficult, where he suffers with his pain and his difficulty, because it's more likely that he'll grow, more likely that he'll reach levels of perfection, more likely that most people will have a much better shot at having an eternity that's great. But the problem is that that's not a perfect world. The world that we occupy now is not perfect, by far not perfect. And Hashem is perfect. And that's the dilemma. How does Hashem, who's perfect, create an imperfect world? And if it could be, my thought is that Hashem could not. Not that He couldn't, but it's not matim, it's not proper for Hashem, who's perfect, to create an imperfect world. And therefore He set the stage and used Adam to be, excuse my expression, the pawn to create exactly that which Hashem wanted. You see, Hashem wanted a world where there'd be pain and suffering and death, because that's ultimately best for man. It's best for mankind as a whole to go through this corridor where it's difficult. It's best for him to suffer, because most people will have a much better shot at Gan Eden, and therefore this is the world that ultimately Hashem wanted. And Hashem created man in a very different world, was directly in Gan Eden, but if that was the world that was to remain, most people would not succeed as much. It wouldn't be as easy to earn your living. And therefore Hashem put man, who Hashem knew would most likely fail, put him into this world, knew that Adam would eat from the Eitz Hadas. Therefore Hashem would introduce death, because that's what Hashem wanted all along. Meaning to say, when the Medrash says, Vayara lakim ki tov ma'od, Hashem saw that it was very good, it wasn't a plan B. It was plan A. Hashem created man, created death before he even made man, because ultimately that's what Hashem wanted. He wanted man to be the one to bring it about for whatever the reason, but the world that we live in now is the world that Hashem wanted to be. Now, that's a very interesting perspective. And I think it's a very interesting perspective, and one that's not so simple to deal with. And I'll share with you what I mean. Most people have a very hard time dealing with failure. And I'd almost like to ask it as a question. What was it like for Adam HaRishon after he failed? What did he feel like? Could you imagine? You look at a world. It was perfect. Pristine. You were put into the ultimate Gan Eden. Everything ready. Everything perfect. And for the rest of mankind's existence, all children would be born in a painless, beautiful world. All generations would enjoy pleasures upon pleasures and have an easy time to earn their eternity. And you destroyed it. You wiped it out. And you're thrown out of that Gan Eden. How do you deal with the guilt? How do you deal with that heavy, heavy burden? And if you're not sure whether Adam had guilt, Rashi tells us that 130 years after he was thrown out of Gan Eden, he rejoined his wife. Because for 130 years he was in mourning. He separated from his wife. He was in a state of mourning, of attempting to do tshuva. He spent 130 years mourning. He understood very, very well that he messed up. So how did he deal with the guilt? How did he deal with the awesomeness of this horrible, horrible thing he brought into the world? I believe he had the right perspective. The right perspective is, I am responsible. I am accountable. And yet, it's what Hashem wanted. I am responsible for death. I'm responsible for pain. I'm responsible for ruining the world. And I also know that it's exactly what Hashem wanted. It was in the original plan. But how could that be? If I'm responsible, how could it be that Hashem wanted it? That's Hashem's cheshbon. Hashem is far wiser than I. But knowing that despite the fact that I'm responsible for what I've done, knowing that there's a plan B, and knowing that that's in fact originally what Hashem knew would happen and what Hashem wanted, I believe is key and essential for dealing with failure. Let me explain to you what I mean. Let's come into our world. We're not Adam HaRishon. We're not perfect. We're nowhere near that. What happens when a young fellow gets married, has a kid or two, and can't shut his mouth? He screams and he yells and he rants and raves, and finally, out of desperation, his wife leaves him. Gets a divorce, leaves with the two kids. And he knows and understands that it's his fault. Not two parties to blame there. Not like she really writes them on. He is to blame. He's at fault. How does he deal with the guilt? How does he deal with the failure? The fact that my children are now going to be brought up in a broken home. That I've ruined their lives and my life. What happens if you're an older single? And when you turn 30 or 35 or 40, you look back and you realize, you know something? I messed up. I passed her by. I know it. I was too picky or too arrogant or too headstrong or whatever, and I'm certain that I messed up. I should have married her 10 years ago or 5 years ago, and I messed up. How do you deal with that understanding? How do you deal with other failures? I could have been. I could have been somebody. I could have been a research scientist, and now look at me, I'm bagging groceries. I could have been a mathematician. I could have been a doctor. More significantly, I could have been a Talmud Chacham. I was in yeshiva anyway. Everybody was learning. If I wasn't so immature, if I had just put my brain on, I could have grown, I could accomplish. I today would be vastly greater than I am. How do you deal with that failure? I think what this Medrash is sharing with us is exactly that point. You have to know and understand that you did not choose your nature. You're a Nivra. Hashem created you. And Hashem knew most likely what's going to happen. Most likely, you're going to lose your temper. You're going to scream. You're going to scream again and again and again and again. And finally, she's going to walk out. And those two kids will be brought up by a different father. Hashem knew that from the beginning. So Hashem knew it, so I'm not responsible. Oh, no. You are responsible. You did it. That divorce is your fault. So I'm dead. My life is ruined. It's over. No. There's an act two. Hashem knew what was going to happen. And Hashem prepared for you a Zivug Sheni. That Zivug Sheni is probably going to be better for you than the Zivug Rishon. And with her, you will build a happy house. And you'll go on and flourish. So you mean I'm not responsible for the divorce? No, you are. But you're responsible for what you did, but Hashem knew your nature. Hashem put you into that situation. Hashem gave you the opportunity, and there's a second chance. Adam HaRishon was given another chance, not to rebuild the world that he destroyed, but he went on to live for centuries. For centuries, he got to do tshuva, he got to grow again, got to do tremendous things. And it may be true that you could have been a research scientist or a doctor or a mathematician, and now you're eking out a living, but that doesn't mean there's not a round two. Hashem has many, many ways of providing parnasa, and many businessmen make a fortune of money, and many educated, worldly, learned people don't, and the opposite is also true. Hashem has many, many ways of providing an income, and because you messed up and you didn't become a lawyer, a doctor, an Indian chief, doesn't mean there's not a second act. And in fact, the same thing holds true when it comes to learning. There's no question I could have learned. I could have been a Talmid Chacham. I could have learned in yeshiva and then kollel. I would have been somebody great. And I didn't. Okay. Still have time. You can still grow. You can still accomplish. But how do I deal with the guilt? You deal with the guilt because you say to yourself, Hashem knew my nature. I didn't choose my temper. I didn't choose my arrogance. I didn't choose my ADHD. Could I have won the fight? Yes. Could I have been greater? Yes. But Hashem knew that most likely I wouldn't. And now it's act two, or it's act three, or it's act four. And there are many, many opportunities that a person has. But the key is so to understand is that Hashem is my creator. Hashem knows my nature. Hashem put me into the situation, and Hashem knows what it is that I'm going to do. And Hashem knows that I'm going to go through this stage and that stage and that stage and that stage. And before I was born, Hashem mapped it all out. This is what's going to happen, then this, then this. Then I'm going to provide you this situation. Then this is going to happen, then this. Then I have this waiting for you. Then this, then this. So while I'm 100% responsible for my choices, and I'm 100% held accountable for what I've done, it doesn't mean it's the end of the world. It doesn't mean there isn't tshuva. And it doesn't mean that there aren't further opportunities. And even more than that, it doesn't mean that the second act won't be greater than the first. And oftentimes, in fact, that's true. Oftentimes, that's a reality. Now, I'd just like to share with you. There's a story told about Rav Moshe Feinstein, Gadol HaDor, when he was an older man, he was sickly, and one Erev Yom Kippur, he wasn't able to go to a tshuva shmuz that he typically went to. A certain Rav would say a tshuva shmuz in yeshiva, and he wasn't able to go. And his family saw he was very upset. And someone said to him, what's Rosh Hashanah so upset about? Shiva's Gan Tzfalin can still go through Yom Kippur. So what's Rosh Hashanah so upset about? And as the story is told, Moshe said to his family member, don't you understand? If a man gets up there and says to me, Moshe Feinstein, you're only living up to 85% of your capacity. Don't you think that would move me? Don't you think it would change me? And I'm missing that. Out of humility, Moshe Feinstein felt that he was only living up to 85% of his capacity, and if someone gave him Musar, he could have added more. I have a sense that he was living up to more than 85% of his capacity, but that's the story. So, let me share with you. If your name is Rav Moshe Feinstein, or if you're one of the Gedolei Hador, one of the great, great tzaddikim of our generation, this piece that I'm now going to say isn't applicable to you, and you don't have to listen. But assuming that you're not that person, I'd like to share with you a very important question. That question is, how much of your capacity are you reaching? How much of you are you really becoming? If you feel you're at 85%, well, that's great. That's fantastic. But I'd like to share with you that, again, unless you're one of the Gedolei Hador, the odds of you reaching 85% of your capacity or living now at 85% of your potential are very, very slim. Most people I know don't come anywhere near 50%, not near 40%. Many I know are hovering somewhere between 10 and 15% of what they could be accomplishing, what they could be doing. And here's the problem. What happens when one day you wake up and you get it? What happens when one day you say to yourself, am I really all I could be? What if? What if when I was 8 years old, instead of bottling, I would have learned? What if when I was 12, instead of fooling around, I would have really paid attention this year? What if in high school, I really put my brain on? Where would I be today? And if you're like most people, I'd like to share with you, you could be much, much greater today than you are. Significantly greater. Fantastically greater. And if you were ever really honest with yourself, you would recognize that the path you've chosen is okay. You're not a Russia, but you're nowhere what you could have been. And if you're not sure that I'm right, I'll share with you one interesting observation. We often talk about godless Adam, the greatness of man. And we say that Hashem would have created the entire world for one man. It's a Mishnah, Sanhedrin. Chayev Adam Lomer, man's obligated to say, Bishvili Nivra Olam, the entire world Hashem would have created for me. But I'd like to share with you how far that concept goes. You see, it's a Pasuk in Bereishis. And the Pasuk in Bereishis says that Vayomer Hashem Elokim, lo tov heyos adam levado. Hashem said, it's not good for man to be alone. E'esa lo eze kenegdo, I'm going to make him a helpmate. Different versions in the Gemara as to exactly what had transpired, but let's take the simple shot. Hashem created Adam alone, and Hashem said, it's not good for him to be alone. It's not good for him. I'm going to make him a helpmate, someone to share life with, someone to be with him, someone to be a support, and someone to be a partner. And then Hashem made Chava, and Adam and Chava joined together. And Ramban asks a very telling question. This pasuk is not true. The reason why Hashem made Chava was not because it's not good for man to be alone. The reason Hashem made Chava is because otherwise you can't have the rest of humanity. If you have a man and no woman, you have no children, you have no generations, you have no future, the world ends with Adam. Asked Ramban, the reason why Hashem made Chava is not because it's not good for man to be alone. The reason why Hashem made Chava is because, gee golly, you need future generations, you need kids. And the Brisker Rav and the Beis Halevi answers this question by saying as follows. That's not true. Hashem made a world, and Hashem made Adam, and that would have been it. Sufficient. I made a world with constellations, with galaxies. I made a world with rivers and oceans. I made a world with forests, all of that for one man. And Hashem would have stopped. It was appropriate. It was proper. The only thing is, if I make one man and he's alone, it's not good for him. So Hashem made him a helpmate. But But if not for the fact that it wasn't good for him to be there alone, it would have been enough. Hashem would have made a world, made one man, and that's it, done. And what the Mishnah in Sanhedrin is telling us is that we're supposed to look at that scene and understand that I too am a man. And what that means in plain language is all that my eye sees, everything in creation, it would have been worthy for Hashem to create for me and me alone. And when you begin understanding the potential given to man, you can begin understanding why it is that Hashem created a world just for man. And then you can begin understanding one of the great secrets of life. If you are not failing in at least one area in life, if you sincerely feel that you're not failing, no, I'm doing fine in all areas of life, I'd like to share with you that you're failing at life. Why? Because if you don't feel that you're falling short in one area or two or three or four, then it means you have no idea of your potential, of your greatness. You have no ability to understand why Hashem would create a whole world for you. You're living in a very diminutive version of the world with a very small picture of you, with a very limited understanding of your potential. And if you wake up in the morning and say, I'm doing pretty good, 85%, I doubt it's because you're of Moshe Feinstein. Much more likely, it's because you become complacent and whatever. Hey, come on, I'm okay, you know. I'm not doing too much bad. I'm doing okay. You know, I even learned a little Dhamma. Look, if some stuff, come on, I'm doing okay. Are you growing? Are you accomplishing? Are you changing yourself and changing the world? Are you reaching heights? Are you becoming a great human being? What are they going to write about you in the biography? Are you going to be in the biographies of the arts? I'm a biography, I'm a regular, blah, 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 regular, what do you want from me? That concept of just a regular person, a plain person, is sheker, is false. Hashem wouldn't create an entire cosmos for a regular guy, for a regular person. Hashem would create an entire world for Adam. And when you understand that I am an Adam, that I was created in the image of Hashem, and I have remarkable potential, I have astonishing potential, you should at some point say to yourself, oh my goodness, what have I done? I'm blowing it. Am I 50% of what I could be? What if I made every right decision from the time I was a little guy? Could you imagine how much greater I'd be than I am today? And what if I really did what's good and what's right and what's proper, what my neshama says to me to do? Where would I be today? And most people that you will encounter could have taken a vastly different track in life and could have been tremendously different. How many guys did you spend time in yeshiva with, and you know, you bottled and they bottled, and at some point in time they changed and they started growing and started steiging and started learning and it became a masmid, and you were still doing your stuff and they started growing and accomplishing and you were still whatever, and you meet them 20 years later and it's unbelievable what they know and what you know. And you say to yourself, I could have been that. And even if you're the guy who chose right, how many opportunities were lost and how many opportunities to be greater? And if you don't have the ability to look back on your life and be critically honest, then you'll never reach your potential. You see, most people are incapable of really growing. You know why? Because I can't be honest. If I'm honest with myself and say to myself, wow, I could have made that right decision and that right decision and I would have been so much greater, they feel so racked with guilt and they become so destroyed as human being that they can't function. So the only answer is they have to shut it off, close it down, whatever, I'm okay. You know, how much could be expected of me anyway? I'm just a regular guy. And they stunt their growth for life. If you'd like to reach godless, if you like to reach greatness, you have to learn to be critically honest. You have to be able to look in the mirror and say, yes, I blew it. Whether I got divorced or I didn't become a doctor, a lawyer, an Indian chief, whether I did something that's clearly noticeable, or if even I just missed many, many life opportunities to be greater, to be more kindly, to be better and sweeter. The Gra tells us that hergil, habit, sholet alakol, habits are what run our lives. habitual behaviors, the way we react. Why do you get angry all the time? Because it became a habit that you started long ago and you keep doing. And why are you lazy? Because it became a habit that you started long ago and you keep doing it. Our habits create tremendous frameworks that guide us. But I made those habits. I'm the one who chose to be nasty. I'm the one who chose to be selfish. And I could have learned to be generous and magnanimous. I could have learned to be kindly. I could have learned to be a nice, sweet guy. But I didn't. And I've made my nature. And I could have been so much greater. Oh no, Rabbi, don't tell me that. How could I live with the guilt? You could live with the guilt because you're supposed to understand that you have remarkable potential. You could be greater than Malachim. And likely it is that you as an Adam were put into a position that you're going to fail. And you have to know that before you were put into this position, Hashem knew that you were going to fail. And you have to know that there's an Act B. You have to know that there's a second opportunity. And you have to be able to look back and say, yes, I messed up. I am responsible. I am accountable. And now I'm going forward. How can I go forward? I feel so racked with guilt. I'm going forward because I know that Hashem put me in this place. Hashem gave me the ability to grow. Hashem knew that I would likely fail. And Hashem is going to put me back into a situation that I can steig, that I can grow further. And I believe there's one more step. Rav Tzadok in Os Kuf Nun Dalet makes a point that's so powerful. He says, just like a man has to have emunah, a man has to believe in Hashem. That's basic. It's the underpinning of everything we do. Kach tzorech achakach lahamin ba'atzmo. After that, he has to believe in himself. You have to believe in Hashem, and you have to believe in yourself. And he says, what does it mean that I believe in myself? You have to believe that Hashem is involved in your life. That Hashem cares about you. That Hashem sets things up for you because Hashem loves you, because Hashem is concerned for you, and you have to believe that you matter. And this is something that people in our generation miss. Come on, what am I? What can you expect of me? I'm a little guy, whatever. Hashem's going to get involved in my life. Does Hashem really care? I put on tefillin, I don't put on tefillin, I dominate. Does Hashem really care? If we could ever know the loving kindness of Hashem, the mercy, the givingness of Hashem, every mitzvah helps me grow. Every mitzvah makes me into a different person. And Hashem wants nothing more than to give and to give and to give. And before I was born, Hashem laid out this situation and that situation, that situation and that situation, because I know what's going to happen. Do I know with Yediyah Brura? Do I know with Vadaya, says Hashem? No. But Hashem is very, very wise and know what's most likely going to happen. And Hashem laid out this scene and that scene, that scene, because Hashem cares about you and wants your success. And Hashem knew that you would fail. Hashem knew that you weren't going to do this. And Hashem created an Act B and Act C and every situation after that so that you can regain ground, you can reach different heights, maybe even greater heights than you could have originally. And this is a tremendous yesod for success. You see, Hashem put man into Gan Eden. Hashem put man into the pristine, perfect world. But it wasn't what Hashem wanted. Because ultimately for man, it's better to be in the world that we're in now. So why did Hashem do it? Hashem had a cheshbon, and Hashem didn't want to create a world with pain, with suffering. So Hashem put man into the world knowing that man would eat from the Eitz Hadas and man would ruin the world. So man's not responsible, right? He had no choice, right? He had choice. And he's held accountable and responsible. And yet he could live with it because he knows that it was part of the plan. And he knows it's what Hashem wanted. And he knows that he has another opportunity to grow and steig and reach new heights. And understanding that there are two concepts of Hashem's Yediyah. Hashem knows everything. And the truth is, if we only know that Hashem knows everything, that alone is enough. But knowing that there are two different methods that Hashem knows the future. And one is bivadoyes, with absolute truth, because Hashem isn't subject to time. From the moment that I was created, put into this world, Hashem was in the future as in the past. And Hashem can say to me now, I know what it is that you did 20 years from now, because Hashem isn't subject to time. Hashem is above time. And whether we can understand that fully or not, the other system, what I call the Jimmy the Greek system, I think we can understand. A parent is far wiser than the child. A parent knows what the child is going to do. Put the lollipop there, she's going to reach for it. And even if you tell her not to, and if you tell her she's going to be punished, and even if you tell her 10 times, you know what's going to happen. Hashem is many, 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 many times wiser than anything we could ever imagine. And Hashem knows fully well what's going to be. And Hashem knows what we're going to go through, what's going to happen. And Hashem has that all mapped out ahead of time. And Hashem believes in us. Hashem is invested in us and would have created an entire world for you and you alone. Even knowing what it is that you were going to do, those terrible, horrible things, that you were going to do this and that, and you were going to, oh my God, that horrible thing. Hashem knew that. And despite that fact, Hashem is concerned, Hashem is involved, and Hashem created an act B, and a second stage, and a third stage, so you can grow further and further, because that's the potential given to man, that's the loving kindness of Hashem. And this is an understanding that is a mature understanding that isn't so easy to attain. And I believe something that's very rare that most people never get. And I'd like to close with a story. It's actually an illustration of the concepts we've been speaking about, but I find it a very powerful one. Dr. Morton Cooper is a speech pathologist, and he teaches people how to speak correctly, speech therapist, and he deals with all different types of speech problems. In his book, he describes that some of the people that come to him are stutterers. They've been stuttering for many years, and he's able to help them, oftentimes cure them. And he explains that most of the people that come to him with stuttering, the stuttering is caused by anxiety. But he explains not the kind of anxiety that we normally think about, not anxiety of, oh my goodness, what am I going to say, or who am I speaking in front of, or how are they going to perceive me. It has nothing to do with what they're going to say. It has everything to do with how they're going to say it. You see, he explains that some people have this understanding of speech, that speech has to be perfect, that every word has to be properly pronounced, the diction has to be exactly right, the tongue has to be perfectly formed, and they get so hung up on the perfect speech, the perfect patterns, the perfect words, that they become so anxious, that they become so paralyzed, that they can no longer speak. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because they fail once or twice as a little child. And they say, you see, I can't do it. You see, I can't speak perfectly. And they become more and more nervous, more and more anxious, and they convince themselves that they cannot speak perfectly. And he explains to them that they're right. You can't speak perfectly because no one speaks perfectly. And he shows them example after example of regular human beings, some people very articulate, some people professional announcers or radio personalities or television personalities who have different times that they'll stop and times they pronounce things incorrectly, times that they use their voice in an improper way. And he shows them over and over that voice usage and speech is not supposed to be perfect. What you're demanding of yourself is incorrect. You think your speech has to be perfect. It doesn't have to be. And he's very successful and is able to cure many, many people. Okay, in his book he describes that a lawyer living in California came to him. He's become famous, very well known, and a lawyer came from California to help have Dr. Cooper help him with his stuttering problem. And Dr. Cooper explained to him the theory. This person had been stuttering since he's 6 years old and literally could barely get out a sentence. Almost every sentence, he was stuttering and gasping, couldn't get out a word. And Dr. Cooper worked with him for about a year and explained to him speech is not perfect. Speech is just speak, don't worry about it, just speak, speak. And he practiced exercising and showing him. And after a while, the fellow got better and better. And after about a year, this lawyer went with his wife back to Boston, where he was born, went to his mother. And when his mother meets him, they speak for a while. And his mother says, whoa, wait, stop. You're not stuttering. Wait, your speech, it's perfect. And his lawyer turns to his mother and says, no, Ma, it's not perfect. It's imperfect, but it works. After all of these years, it works. And I think that mushel is very important. Speech isn't perfect, but it can be powerful. It can change the course of history. It can change your life. You can communicate. But if you listen very carefully, if you listen to a tape of yourself, if you listen carefully to your articulation, your diction, it's not perfect. And I think that's a mushel for life. Hashem does not expect perfection from Adam. The Malachim, angels, are perfect. Man isn't. But we're not supposed to be perfect. Before Hashem created us, Hashem knew we were going to do some things great and some things we were going to mess up. And we were going to do things badly. And we were going to do things that are embarrassing and ugly and downright bad. And that was part of the game plan. And that was part of the knowledge. Because man wasn't created to be perfect. And despite that fact, Hashem created us. And despite the fact that Hashem knew what I was going to do, and despite the fact that Hashem knew exactly what I was going to accomplish and get involved with, and whatever, Hashem made me. And more than that, Hashem says, I would have created the whole world for you. But me? Hashem, you know what I'm going to do. You know the stuff I'm going to get involved in. Oh, I know. It's worth it. Because a human can change, a human can grow, a human can accomplish. Hashem is loving, Hashem is kindly, Hashem gives us many opportunities. Hashem grant us the wisdom, understanding, and ability to put this into practice.